All right, on with it. Welcome to The Radical Agenda. It's a show about common sense extremism where we talk about radical, crazy, off-the-wall things like making sure all your equipment works before you do a live broadcast. Yes, this agenda is quite radical, and welcome to it. What will probably end up being the 90th episode of the program. Today is January 16th, 2016. It's a Saturday morning, nearing the afternoon, as it were. And we are coming to you live from my sorry excuse for a studio in Keene, New Hampshire, where some of you have already been watching. This might be repetitive if you've been watching live, but I've been doing a little troubleshooting this morning. So, as the live audience is well aware by this point, I used to do this show with a couple of Core 2 Duos with 2 gigs of RAM each. I've now removed those. I bought new computers. I have two Lenovo ThinkCenter's i7 quad-core processors with 16 gigs of RAM each. And I tried to start it off this morning. We were still having some audio trouble. And then I went and I upgraded the sound card on the machine that is using the that is actually doing the broadcasting. So now it does seem to be working. And I'm very happy to announce that because this has been a thorn in my side and a thorn in the side of a lot of you. We've had some problems with the video being out of sync with the audio, with some like grainy, choppy video, with the tune-in feed not working. And all of that jazz. It's been problematic, as they say on Tumblr, and we don't want to be problematic on The Radical Agenda. Hate to upset those, you know, those Tumblr SJWs. They're just such fine people. We wouldn't want to upset them with crappy video and audio quality. Right? No. We want to upset them with, you know, racism and misogyny. So, welcome to The Radical Agenda. Thank you very much for tuning into the program. So there's actually a whole bunch of things that we could sort of get into here. I'm shocked. I never cease to be surprised by the lunacy that goes on in the world. But if you listen to the program, that comes as no surprise to you, right? You've been watching me, you know, scratch my head at just how fucking crazy things can get for a long time now. All right. And so, you know, these cultural Marxists, you know, they got these cultural Marxists. They're just like, oh, all cultures are the same. I played the clip last night from Molyneux. He said, if you think people are just, you know, interchangeable or whatever, just say, I'm a cultural communist and drop the mic and walk the fuck out of the room. And I thought that was very well put, you know, because when you start looking at other cultures, you find out that some of these people are batshit off the wall insane, right? And now I got this piece in the Daily Caller, by Jonah Bennett. And the title is Anti-Pedophilia Bill Rejected in Pakistan as Anti-Islamic. Anti-pedophilia is anti-Islamic. Oh, well, why don't you guys come over here? You want to be my next-door neighbor? Why don't you babysit the kids, huh? Let's get you a job at a preschool if you think that an anti-pedophilia law is against your religion. A bid to ban child marriage in Pakistan utterly failed after the Council of Islamic Ideology declared the legislation anti-Islamic and blasphemous. The bill didn't even move past the first stage in the legislative process, the Express Tribune reports. It almost immediately pulled Thursday by Pakistan Muslim League parties, Marvi Menon, following condemnation from CII, whose job it is to advise the legislature on whether bills are compliant with Sharia law. In this case, the bill clearly violated Islamic law's tradition holds marriage as acceptable when a girl hits puberty. After CII's declaration, a parliamentary committee rejected the legislation solely for religious reasons, and Menon subsequently pulled the legislation. Existing legislation in Pakistan already violates Islamic law. The Child Marriage Restraint Amendment Act of 2014 places the legal age of marriage at 16 for women, but the recent proposal attempted to move that age up to 18 and included serious punishment for the practice of child marriage. That punishment would have included prison for up to 2 years for anyone caught engaging in child marriage. Oh, that's fantastic. You fuck a child and you only get 2 years in prison for it, huh? Oh, that's great. And then, once you get out, we can put you on a subsidized airplane and bring you over to America. And Barack Obama can give you some college. You know, we'll give you some food. We'll put you up in a nice place to stay. And you can become my neighbor and get a job as a teacher. According to the organization, Girls Not Brides, over 21% of the girls in Pakistan enter into marriage before the age of 18. Come on, 18? CII Chairman Mohammed Khan Sirani reiterated in 2014 that girls can be married at age 9, so long as puberty is apparent, adding that attempts to revisit the issue are pointless and unnecessary. 9 years old. Oh, that's right, because Muhammad did it. Ah, just be just like the prophet. CII was created in 1962 with the express purpose of advising Parliament on Islamic law. CII is also known for calling to make DNA evidence inadmissible in rape cases as recently as 2013. What CII wanted instead is to bring back the old practice of bringing in 4 witnesses to support rape claims. Hey, I'm gonna express some sympathy here. Let's have that pendulum swing back the other way. Because, in America, you don't have to have a whole lot of evidence, to get convicted of rape, right? You just be like, oh, she said you raped her. Kick you out of school. Fuck you. We'll ruin your life. Maybe the thing to do is to require 4 eyewitnesses. With increasing immigration, the practice of child marriage has also spread to the West, raising alarm, especially in the United Kingdom. According to data from the Home Office's Forced Marriage Unit, there were 1,485 cases of child marriage in 2012. Another government report also found child marriage is increasing around the world, with the rate expected to climb to 14 million child marriages before the year 2020 hits. Pakistan has pledged to end child marriage by 2030 as part of a global initiative. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get around to not fucking our children by 2030, okay? Everybody, you guys just hang on there. You guys relax. We'll go send everybody over to your country to fuck your children. And then by 2030, maybe we'll tone it down a little bit. 218-936-0815, A Radical Agenda on Skype. If you'd like to be on the program, and the more you talk, the less I have to. So please do give us a call. For those of you who are wondering, yes, we are live on this Saturday morning nearing afternoon because I was testing some equipment out. And as you might have noticed, seems to be working out okay. Seems to be working out. I'm actually looking at myself on the camera there. I'm actually playing it on the Roku box in front of me. And I never quite realized how good looking I am. I am a good looking guy, especially when the fucking camera is not like whiting me out and making me look like a fucking like a ghost, right? I mean, as if I'm not fucking white enough to begin with. We had a few episodes there where the camera, I don't know, it was the overexposure or what was happening there. I imagine some of you had to wear fucking sunglasses to watch this thing. 218-936-0815, A Radical Agenda. On a Skype there. I'm happy. I'm glad I, I think one of the things that was even better than replacing the computers was that I replaced a sound card. And that was probably something I should have done before I went and, spent hundreds of dollars on new computers. But, you live and you learn. You live and you learn there. 218-936-0815. Radical Agenda. On a Skype, Sam. So here's a fun one. The people in Switzerland they had the good sense to keep themselves homogenous for a while there, and here's how they're gonna hope to prevent refugee sex attacks with a cartoon. Yes, that's right. They've got a cartoon to introduce to the refugees as they allow them into Sweden. The traditionally inert, neutral, and quite homogenous nation of Switzerland is not used to having cultural integration issues. This is a story in Zero Hedge by Tyler Durden. I think that might be an alias. Which is why it has been watching recent events across the German border and elsewhere in Europe with sheer terror. And in order to preempt any possible outbreaks of refugee violence against women or in general, ahead of the Lucerne Carnival starting on February 4th, Switzerland is getting ready. According to Blick, the Department of Health and Social Services will use the following Austrian cartoon flyer dubbed Ground Rules, which will be distributed amongst incoming migrants ahead of the noted Swiss Carnival, which it hopes will make it clear what is and isn't permitted. It lays out various instances of accepted social behavior, such as kissing and praying, while making it clear that punching women and children in the head is frowned upon in polite society. Welcome to our country. We realize that you might not be familiar with our customs. So here's a cartoon that shows that you it shows you that it is unacceptable to beat and rape children. Oh, that's so great. I love this tolerance. So tolerant. However, concerned that migrants would be less than inclined to read the text, the follow-up was populated with pictograms or cartoons. According to Blake, distributing the flyer was a spontaneous decision that took place after the attacks in Germany on New Year's Eve, when Swiss authorities received a number of reactions. However, they add that it was a preventative measure. We currently have no problems. Oh, that currently word, huh? Gotta love currently. The future's grand, ain't it? As for the flyer, the local government has determined to focus on role models and equality between men and women. They want to show that there is zero tolerance for sexual harassment. The motto is, if you come to us, abide by our rules. A comparable flyer in Germany was found to have fanned racism and explanations. With explanations such as, young girls feel harassed by demands such as asking for a cell phone number or Facebook contact or marriage proposals. Or, when nature calls, we do it exclusively on toilets, not in parks and gardens, and not on hedges or behind bushes. Yes, of course, if you point out that custom in your country is to poop in the toilet instead of on the street, you're a racist. you gotta love the Europeans. Whether the cartoons will be successful in taming the refugees' more base instincts, tune in after the Lucerne Carnival has started on February 4th to find out. And I will be glued to European news coverage to find out what happens there, because that does sound like a fantastically fucked up idea. 218-936-0815, a radical agenda on a Skype there if you'd like to be on the program. And the more you talk, the less I have to, so please do give us a call. We normally do this from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. But as I mentioned a couple of times already, we are doing a little sound and audio check, making sure everything's working here. And so, And so that's why we're here on this Saturday afternoon, and welcome to it. 218-936-0815, a radical agenda on a Skype here if you'd like to be on the program. Sweden's funding some shit, too. So Sweden wants to get the Muslims. They want to get them familiar, right? So the way that they're trying to assimilate them into the culture, really brilliant idea the Swedes got going on there. Sweden, state-funded Muslim sniper training. There you go. Hey, you're trying to flee from ISIS? I got an idea. We'll teach you how to be a sniper. The Swedish state is funding a sniper training program for recently arrived third world refugees as part of their integration program, despite the ever-growing refugee terrorist attacks across Europe. This is in the New Observer Online. The almost unbelievable plunge into insanity started 2 years ago already was reported in a positive pro-refugee light by the Allehanda newspaper in Sweden under the title Fired Up for Sniping. And shows a large number of third worlders being taught how to target shoot with sniper target rifles on a formal shooting ground in Sollefteå, central Sweden. I know my Scandinavian friends probably telling you I'm fucking this up. The Allehanda informs its readers that the sniping course began on a small scale in the fall, but then for reasons which are obvious, but which the Swedish newspaper ignores, interest exploded among the non-white invaders to take the course. Oh, that's right. They were like, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we open you up to an arts and crafts class, or we could teach you not to poop in the bushes, or we could teach you how to be a sniper. And all of them went to be snipers. Shocking. Imagine that. A bunch of people from ISIS coming into your country want to shoot guns. When the Allehanda visited the shooting range, more than 50 immigrant youths were on the course, honing their shooting skills. Even more incredibly, the sniping course is being paid for by Sweden's state-funded migration agency as an integration program into Swedish society. Young people from all over the world, Syria, Afghanistan, Africa, and South America, are taking sniping lessons, the Allehanda said. And some of them are interested and very talented, very good snipers over there in Sweden. That's fantastic. The paper quoted course supervisor Birgit Hoglund as saying, the program is offered as part of the language course at the local upper secondary school, Hoglund said. saying that the benefits of the program are much more than just teaching invaders how to use sniping rifles. Oh, it's a, oh, would you like to learn English and shoot a gun, huh? Maybe I should have, that's what I should have done. When I filled out the background check form to go get my little 380, I probably wouldn't have gotten delayed if I had just told them that, you know, I'm a refugee and I'm trying to learn how to speak English in your country. Can I have a sniper rifle? That would have avoided that whole background check mess. Here they talk Swedish in other social contexts, meet new people, and hang out. It is especially good for their vocabulary, Hoglund said. State-funded sniper training for young immigrants seems so out of place that such an undertaking is firmly in the realm of the insane and would, if not actually happening, be the subject of some bizarre joke. Unfortunately, it is not. Wow. Wow. That's in the New Observer Online. You know, hey, maybe the thing to do there is tell them to go fuck themselves. Maybe instead of, you know, no, how do we make these people feel more comfortable? I got an idea. Let's give them guns. 218-936-0815 or Radical Agenda on the Skype. And let's see. Let's see here. All right, so I started to go into this one when I was having audio trouble. Let's go into it. A recession worse than 2008 is coming. This is not good news, ladies and gentlemen. The economy, you know, economy, kind of important, right? I know some people, they don't think the economy is important, right? There's some people who think all that matters is race, right? They're like, hey, all that matters is black lives, right? And all that matters to some people is white nation, right? To some people, the economy doesn't matter. They're like, stock market? Oh, I just care about pot and polyamory. I just want to get high and watch other people fuck my girlfriend. You know, some people don't think the economy is very important. But I'll tell you what, not caring about the economy has sort of been responsible for more misery and destruction than just about any other stupid fuck thing that anybody's ever done. So... you might want to know a thing or two about economics and about the economy. And I apologize, you know, we had, before we got off on all these tangents on this program about race and all this social justice horseshit, we used to talk about economics once in a while. And then as the news coverage became dominated by, you know, social issues, it became the focus of the program. And that's kind of unfortunate because I was never into that prior. But, you know, things are not looking good. A recession worse than 2008 is coming. This is by Michael Pento at CNBC. The S&P 500 has begun 2016 with its worst performance ever. This has prompted Wall Street apologists to come out in full force and try to explain why the chaos in global currencies and equities will not be a repeat of 2008. Now, I should point out, this is from last night, and I've been troubleshooting shit all day. For all I know, as a matter of fact, let me check the markets real quick. Let's find out how the stock market opened today, because maybe this is all straightened out, and I'm saying this for no reason. Let's find a more updated article. Economy, business. Where's my business? How's the stock market looking right now? So some people say no 2008-style collapse, but big investors see yet lousy U.S. environment. Walmart to shut hundreds of stores. Yeah, it doesn't look like we've got... Here, Dow Jones. Yeah, Dow Jones down 398 points. This is not good. Oh, that's the January 15th call. Oh, it's Saturday. What am I talking about? Okay, it's Saturday. Anyway, nor do they want investors to believe this environment is commensurate with the dot-com bubble bursting. They claim the current turmoil in China is not even comparable to 1997's Asian debt crisis. Indeed, the unscrupulous individuals that dominate financial institutions and governments seldom predict a downtick on Wall Street. So don't expect them to warn of an impending global recession and market mayhem. But a recession has occurred in the U.S. about every 5 years on average since the end of World War II, and it has been several years since the last one. We're overdue, ladies and gentlemen. More importantly, the average market drop during the peak to trough of the last six recessions has been 37%. That would make the S&P 500 down to 1,300 if this next recession were to be put just the average variety. But this one will be much worse, warns Michael Pento in CNBC. A major contributor for this imminent recession is the fallout from a faltering Chinese economy. The megalomaniac communist government has increased debt 28 times since the year 2000, taking that total north to 300% of GDP in a very short period of time for the primary purpose of building a massive, unproductive, fixed asset bubble that adds little to GDP. Now, let me try to break that down a little bit. The Chinese government has taken its total debt in excess of 300%. That's triple what its GDP is. That means that if the Chinese government took everything that was produced, it's an entire economy, for 3 years, that's how much it would take to pay off its national debt. And normally, when you're borrowing money that way, you're probably gonna add a little bit to that before you start paying it off, right? Because you gotta. It's not easy. And of course, if you took everything from everybody for the first year, they'd all starve. You know, you can't go years without food, right? So that's not going to happen. So if the Chinese government decided to start paying off its debts right now, it'd take a little while. You know, U.S. not a whole lot of better shape, right? I mean, we are a whole lot better off than China, as it were, but it's still a lot. You know, I think it definitely has exceeded 100% exactly where we are. I don't know. Now that this debt bubble is unwinding, growth in China is going offline. The renminbi's falling value cascading Shanghai equity prices down 40% since June of 2014 and plummeting rail freight volumes down 10.5% year over year all clearly illustrate that China is not growing at the promulgated 7%, but rather isn't growing at all. The problem is that China accounted for 34% of global growth, and the nation's multiplier effect on emerging markets takes that number to over 50%. Therefore, expect more stress on multinational corporate earnings as global growth continues to slow. But the debt debacle in China is not the primary catalyst for the next recession in the United States. It is the fact that equity prices and real estate values can no longer be supported by incomes and GDP. And now that the Federal Reserve's quantitative easing and zero interest rate policy have ended, these asset prices are succumbing to the gravitational forces of deflation. Now, I'm going to go ahead and point out that there's no deflation. They're not removing fucking money from the economy. But, you know, they're not printing it quite as fast. The median home price to income ratio is currently 4.1, whereas the average ratio is 2.6. Therefore, despite record low mortgage rates, first-time home buyers can no longer afford to make the down payment. And without first-time home buyers, existing homeowners can't move up. Likewise, the total value of stocks that have now become dangerously detached from the anemic state of the underlying economy. The long-term average of the market cap to GDP ratio is around 75, but it is currently 110. The rebound in GDP coming out of the Great Recession was artificially engendered by the Fed's wealth effect. Now, the re-engineered bubble in stocks and real estate is reversing and should cause a severe contraction in consumer spending. People see their stocks going down, like they got in retirement accounts, right? And they're like, oh, I got all this money. And then they look at it, and it's like, oh, wait a second, I don't have a lot of money. And then they stop spending. Nevertheless, people ask you, like, why do you look at the stock market? Right? Because they're like, do you own stocks? If you don't own stocks, why would you look at the stock market? Because you don't know that has like a profound effect on everything. The stock market, you know, economic indicator, oil prices, good thing to know about. You know, you want to pay attention to what's going on in the world. You know, politicians that get up there and tell you, the economy shit, your life is miserable because inequality, right? Everything is going to hell because racism, right? No. It's the economy, stupid, right? So it's good to know what's happening there. Nevertheless, the solace offered by Wall Street is that another 2008-style deflation and depression is impossible because banks are now better capitalized. However, banks may find they are less capitalized than regulators now believe because much of their assets are in treasury debt and consumer loans that should be significantly underwater after the next recession brings unprecedented fiscal strain to both public and private sectors. So the banks, you know, fractional reserve lending, okay? So the banks, you put some money in the bank, and the bank is like, oh, I've got $100. I think I'll make $1,000 in loans, right? Now, wait a second. Why is that happening? Hang on a second. Is this working? Are you guys still seeing me on YouTube here? Because my Roku seemed to have stopped. All right, so hopefully that's working, and it's just my Roku box that's giving me a problem. Okay, so the banks loan out more money than they have, right? And so this is what they're talking about. Are they better capitalized? Uh-huh. So they loan out 10 times what they have, right? And it's really more than that because they loan it out and then some guy puts it in the bank and then they loan that out. It's ridiculous. Fractional reserve banking. You study that? Scary, scary stuff. Okay? You can have like a run on the banks. People go when they want to get their money out of the bank because they're like, oh my God, the bank is going to fail. I better go get my money out. And then what happens is everybody goes to get their money out and then the bank fails as a result, right? So the Federal Reserve, they say, hey, you've got to be better capitalized. You have to have more reserves, right? But what happens is in reserve, what they've got is a bunch of government debt. In reserve, they're like, I've got an idea. I'll go lend some money to the federal government. Oh, we'll just lend some money to the federal government. Not like they would ever fuck up, right? You know, hey, we've got all the money in the world. We just lent it to the feds. And, you know, it's not like they'd go launch an irresponsible war, right? It's not like they'd do anything completely ridiculous, like elect a fucking socialist to the presidency. It's not like they'd ever do anything like that. So they think, oh, we just loaned some money to the government, and therefore we're all set. Oh, we loaned some money out to these fine folks over here because the federal government told us that we'd be racist if we didn't. And then guess what happens? When the recession comes, and it'll come, as they were saying, you know, we go through a recession every 5 years on average, you know, we're overdue. So when the recession comes, people start defaulting on their debts. So you loan somebody some money, and you're like, hey, I've got capital. It's like this note right here that says that this guy owes me money. And then, like, you're like, oh, wait a second. I lent money to this guy because the bank could, because the federal government told me it was racist not to. And now, for some reason, this guy can't pay me back. That's weird. So when the federal government goes crazy and does irresponsible things, and when the federal government forces banks to lend to people, and then those people don't pay back their debts when the recession comes, believe me when I tell you, you got problems. But most importantly, even if one were to concede, financial institutions are less leveraged. The startling truth is that businesses, the federal government, and the Federal Reserve have taken on a humongous amount of additional debt since 2007. Even household debt has increased back to its 2007 record of $14.1 trillion. That's not what your government owes. Your government owns a lot more than that. You, the people, we the people. $14.1 trillion in household debt. Specifically, business debt during that time frame has grown from $10.1 trillion to $12.6 trillion. The total national debt boom from $9.2 trillion to $18.9 trillion. And the Fed's balance sheet has exploded from $880 billion to $4.5 trillion. That's a lot of money. Well, we all owe all this money, and we're all broke. And what do we do? Well, we're going to do that. We'll wash some dishes, I guess. Banks may be better off today than they were leading up to the Great Recession, but the government and Fed's balance sheets have become insolvent in the wake of their inane effort to borrow and print the economy back to health. As a result, the federal government's debt has now soared to nearly 600% of total revenue, and the Fed has spent the last 8 years leveraging up its balance sheet 77-to-1 in its goal to peg short-term interest rates at 0%. Therefore, this inevitable and by all accounts brutal upcoming recession will coincide with two unprecedented and extremely dangerous conditions that should make the next downturn worse than 2008. First, the Fed will not be able to lower interest rates and provide any debt service relief for the economy. In the wake of the Great Recession, former Fed Chair Ben Bernanke took the overnight interbank lending rate down to 0% from 5.25% and printed $3.7 trillion. The Fed bought longer-term debt in order to push down mortgages and nearly every other form of debt to record lows. Now, we talked about interest rates on here before. Interest is kind of an important thing, right? If everybody's saving money and there's lots of money available to borrow, then interest rates necessarily become very low. And if interest rates are very high, that is an indicator that there is very little money being saved. Interest is the price of money, right? It's the time value of money. So, like, you don't generally just lend somebody. I mean, maybe you do it for, like, your friend or something like that, right? Like, here's 10 bucks, pay me whenever. But most people don't do that, right? The bank lends money at interest because they want to get a return on their investment, right? Now, some people, they don't like high interest rates. They're like, high interest rates are make things difficult. High interest rates are making things difficult. We should figure out a way to lower interest rates. Well, this is very short-sighted, right? Because they do not understand that interest rates, like high interest rates, are not some crazy price gouging phenomenon. Like, people complain about usury and shit. High interest rates are a market signal, right? High interest rates indicate that there is not much saving and a great deal of borrowing going on. And so the price of money goes higher. And so the Federal Reserve, these central planning idiots, they say, okay, well, we will artificially set interest rates in order to avoid this, you know, unpleasant phenomenon of high interest rates. But high interest rates come because of the unpleasant phenomenon of people not saving money. High time preference. It's not a good thing for your civilization. So they lower the interest rate artificially. They lower the interest rate artificially. And then what happens is you go and borrow money. You're incentivized, right? And you're disincentivized from saving money. Why would I save money? Interest rates are so low. I might as well spend it. Interest rates are lower than the rate of inflation. The saving money is a bad bet right now. Interest rates are set by the Federal Reserve at 0.5%, when the Federal Reserve is aiming for inflation of 2%. Yes, that's a negative interest rate. If you borrow money, you're earning just by borrowing. Normally, when you borrow money, you have to pay interest on that, which exceeds the rate of inflation. And thus you are paying to borrow money. Now you are being paid. What does that say about your currency if they literally have to pay to give it away? That's a problem. 218-936-0815 or Radical Agenda on Skype. It's huge. And so now that the Federal Reserve has lowered the interest rate, like, they had this one crisis, and they're like, okay, we'll take the interest rate, quantitative easing, quantitative QE1, QE2, QE3, QE4 ever, right? And now they're like, oh my God, here comes another recession. We've been doing this for 5 years, you know, and here we go. Now we're nearing another recession, and what are they going to do? You can't lower interest rates. They lowered interest rates 5.25 points, 5.25% down to zero when the first one hit. Now interest rates are at 0.5 percentage point, 50 basis points. Well, that's, what are you going to do? Cut it down 25 basis points? It's ridiculous. There's nothing you could do. There's no Federal Reserve mechanism to fix this. The best the Fed can do now is take away its 0.25% rate hike made in December. Second, the federal government is increased. The federal government increased the amount of publicly traded debt by $8.5 trillion, an increase of 170%, and ran $1.5 trillion deficits to try to boost consumption through transfer payments. Another such ramp up in deficits and debt, which are a normal function of recessions after revenue collapses, would cause an interest rate spike that would turn this next recession into a devastating depression. It is my belief, in order to avoid the surging cost of debt service payments on both public and private sector level, the Fed will feel compelled to launch a massive and unlimited round of bond purchases. However, not only are interest rates already at historic lows, but faith in the ability of central banks to provide sustainable GDP growth will have already been destroyed, given their failed 8-year experiment with quantitative easing. Therefore, the ability of government to save the markets and the economy this time around will be extremely difficult, if not impossible. Look for chaos in currency, bond, and equity markets on an international scale through 2016. Indeed, it has already begun. Not good news, ladies and gentlemen. So I enjoyed that one. I thought that was a good read. That's Michael Pento over at CNBC. 218-936-0815, Radical Agenda on Skype, if you'd like to be on the program. And if you would like to call in, do it soon, because I'll probably wrap up. As I mentioned a few times already, I mean, we're sort of doing this as like I've started this off as a sound check, and it does seem to be going all right, which is good news for me, because I was concerned a little bit that it wouldn't be, because we had some trouble earlier. You know, I got some new computers, And there's all of this, you know, stuff that comes along with that. Let me play a little clip, and I will be right back. This is An Equal Opposite Reaction. An Equal and Opposite Reaction by Christopher Cantwell, originally published at ChristopherCantwell.com, November 28th, 2015. If you've been paying any attention to the goings-on in libertarian circles over the last few years, you would probably have a difficult time not noticing the massive buildup of left-wing lunacy that has been boiling over as of late. Misandry parading as feminism, anti-white sentiment disguised as anti-racism, crackpot economic theories, promotion of deviant sexual behaviors, pacifism, drugs, you name it. Libertarianism is being laughed out of the human consciousness in large part because so many of the people calling themselves libertarians are little more than debaucherous reality detached libertines and sodomites. Murray Rothbard spent some time associating with similar elements after his departure from the National Review in the 1960s. It was a disaster. I had previously speculated their recent rise had a lot to do with the Ron Paul campaign. Ron Paul's candidacy was about the single largest boost we've seen in people's interest in libertarianism to date, and it moved the discussion considerably rightward. Simultaneously, it had anti-war Democrats registering Republican for a chance to vote in the primary and getting involved in libertarian circles. After being profoundly disrespected at the GOP convention, the movement largely began to embrace its anarchist roots. This seemed very positive at first. Libertarians are anarchists whether they realize it or not, after all. But the shift contained a fatal flaw. This was not Rothbardian anarcho-capitalism, it was voluntarism. It embraced the non-aggression principle, or at least it purported to, but it lacked certain underlying presumptions about the reality of the world. Instead, it replaced the ontological structure of the universe with what Rothbard called the new menace of Gandhiism, a mystical theology of dogmatic pacifist gobbledygook. Inside this petri dish of fantastical nonsense, leftism thrived. The leftist elements, old and new, recruited to begin vanquishing and shaming their reactionary counterparts. How fantastic would the world be, they told their liberal friends, if they could have all their irrationality and irresponsibility and yet not have to pay taxes. This became very popular, especially among student groups. Why pay your student loans? We'll just collapse the government with flower power. They grew their ranks and foolishly were celebrated, elevated, and given positions of respect and power within libertarian organizations. Even previously respectable high-profile names jumped camps to get their fill of the human and material resources it brought to the table. Right-leaning elements of the libertarian movement have suffered the same hindrances as other right-wing movements in the face of all this. To challenge them is to be labeled a violent, racist, sexist, homophobe, to be chased out of polite society as the worst type of villain, to lose speaking engagements and even your career. And of course, when you back off of defense in race and gender and sexuality, the left just keeps on pushing. We're now expected to celebrate transgenderism, and not only in consenting adults, but in children too young to have the slightest concept of what gender entails. Not only are we obliged to support open borders, but if those open borders turn into magnetic ones, then Barack Obama wants to subsidize the importation of poverty-stricken religious zealots from countries that same president has been bombing, we're just supposed to ignore the massive tax burden, security threats, and cultural conflicts they bring with them, or else be called a racist. Not only are we horrible villains for studying science that explains demographic disparities, but when the demographic that commits most of the violent crime in America burns cities to the ground in support of violent criminals, we're all supposed to cheer them on for doing so. Not only that, but we're all supposed to feel really bad about this because it is all the fault of our white privilege that animals are destroying their own communities where they hold all the political power. Well, folks, they call it reactionary for a reason, and things are about to get very ugly. A growing number of libertarians are coming to grips with the reality that the left will never be satiated in their frenzied wanton lust for deceit, debauchery, and yes, statism. We realize that once whatever deviancy of the day is accepted as normal, they will demand it become noble. Once it becomes noble, then we'll move on to some other mental illness and start the process over again. If let run to its ultimate logical conclusion, the only moral choice will be the extinction of mankind, as life itself becomes too much privilege to be tolerated. Well, we're entirely uncomfortable with that outcome. We're going to begin fixing the problem, and we're not going to do it nicely, because doing things nicely is what got us in this mess in the first place. You are not going to destroy our way of life. You're not going to make a mockery of libertarianism. You are not going to censor the truth. For every bit of social justice warrior nonsense we have endured, we will punish you with race realism, male dominance, and heteronormativity. We will tell the truth and enjoy our humor about race and gender and sexuality. If you call us racist and sexist and homophobes, we will call you niggers, cunts, and faggots. If you're sort of on our side and say we've gone too far, we will call you cuck. We will ceaselessly escalate until you are triggered right back to the Green Party where you fucking belong. We will defend ourselves against threats to our safety, including those being imposed on us by the ballot box. So if you want to run around radicalizing the Democratic Party and rubbing Bernie Sanders' dick under the table, then we will elect an openly racist billionaire to the White House and mock you into a suicidal depression from the Oval Office. If he decides to start throwing you out of fucking helicopters, well, then we're just going to have to learn to cope with the guilt of laughing hysterically at your untimely death. Here's a great line from Stefan Molyneux. White people are really nice until they're not. We are capable of some truly terrible shit when you put us in a corner right up to and including physical removal, so to speak. Do not turn us into those monsters again. We want to coexist in peace with the peoples of the world. We far prefer to operate within the confines of reason and negotiation. But we are beginning to conclude that reason is a thing beyond your capacity, and negotiation is impossible in its absence. So if you insist on nihilistic lunacy and societal suicide that punishes us for your stupidity, then we will do what is necessary to protect ourselves and our way of life. And make no mistake about it, we will win like we always have by any means necessary. All right, welcome back to the Radical Agenda. I hope that somebody told me that the volume on my mic was too low, and I hope that I have, let me see here. Maybe, is that better now? Okay, that should be better. All right, welcome back to the Radical Agenda. It's a show about common sense extremism where we talk about radical, crazy, off-the-wall things. And if you are just tuning in, yes, of course, we usually don't air on Saturday afternoons, but we are here doing that today because I was doing a little bit of a sound check. So let's go to the phones. 801, you are on the Radical Agenda. What's your agenda?
Hey, Chris, it's Zach.
Hey, Zach, what's popping?
Not so much. I heard you talking a little bit about the financial crisis that's coming up on us. Have you seen the movie The Big Short?
I have not seen The Big Short.
Well, I highly recommend it. It's pretty good. It explains how they made a lot of money on the housing crisis, shorting the markets. Curious as to how you think someone would go about shorting this bond market.
Well, I am not. I like to study economic trends, but I'm not an expert in stocks and bonds, right? So I am not one to give financial advice. I spot problems. I don't necessarily know how to go about doing that. Peter Schiff might, but I think that he'd just be like, buy gold. A lot of these guys do, which, you know, if you had listened to some of these guys when they told you to buy gold some time ago, you'd not be in such a good shape right now. Right. But if you had some gold, I imagine that it would probably turn out to be a good investment when this fucking bubble pops, cause it's not going to be good now. Yeah, so I'm sorry. I don't know how you would go about shorting a bond market. It's not a thing that I know the answer to, unfortunately. I just scream about doom and gloom and tell people to buy guns.
Right. I kind of noticed that the stock market as it's plummeting, we're seeing Bitcoin prices going down too, and I thought it would be kind of a hedge against that, but
well, Bitcoin prices have gone down a little bit as of late, but I mean they are up. Oh, what, shit! Jesus Christ! Bitcoin like tanked today. What happened here? I just looked at this. So yeah, Bitcoin is down to 370. Yesterday it was up at 400 and something. Oh, it was down yesterday too. What is going on here? Bitcoin has been volatile as of late. What this is? Oh no, that's it's going back to October. Yesterday, what's the date on this thing? Yeah, just.
Yeah, I figured, with the global economy the way it is, I figured people would be funneling their money into an asset that's not tied to currencies, like Bitcoin.
You might think that, but I mean, the Bitcoin thing can be hard to keep track of, and I haven't looked at like the cryptocurrency news sites in a couple of days, so I do not know what the speculation is as to what this sudden drop off was. Because yeah, Bitcoin was up; it was up over four, it was up around like 450, and I was feeling really good about that. And now it is down. Bitcoin is down to 370, and it had been up. I mean, back in October, it was down to 239, went up to 400 in November, and then it tanked back down into the 300s. But since December, it has been up mostly above 400, and now it just come on, move this fucking thing so I can see what I'm looking at here. January 1st.
Well, that's all I had for you.
Yeah, all right, thanks, buddy. 218-936-0815, a radical agenda on Skype if you'd like to be on the program. And the more you talk, the less I have to, so please do give us a call. Yeah, it does not, not good, the Bitcoin thing. Well, it's not that it's not good, right? I mean, if you wanted to go buy some Bitcoin, this is good news. You can go out and get some. I'm glad I actually just recently spent some Bitcoin, and I'm glad I did when I did, because I spent my Bitcoin when it was up over $400. Now it's down to 370, so it looks like I, without even, you know, having any foresight of what just came, and it looks like I did good. 218-936-0815, or Radical Agenda on Skype. I haven't read this yet, but it looks like fantastically fucked up. This is Catherine Ripley at Huffington Post. Healthy living. Catherine Ripley is going to tell you about some healthy living here. And the title of the article is Sex After Trauma, The Psychology Behind My Promiscuity. So Catherine's going to tell us about why she's a whore. And that's your healthy living for today. About a year ago, I wrote this column for my college newspaper's special issue on sex, love, and intimacy. It's about the difficulties with having sex after experiencing sexual trauma. It's about 99% truthful. Yeah, 99%, which means I'm lying. And if I'm willing to lie about that, it's probably a lie about the percentage as well. Nowhere in that column do I tell lies, but I did omit certain things that would have been relevant to include. I wrote a scrubbed clean version of my story, partially to make it more palatable, and partially because I didn't fully understand the psychological mechanisms behind what I was going through. I was trying to protect my reputation before I realized I had nothing to be ashamed of. I'm finally laying everything out on the table because I know there are people in the world who need to hear this. And any company that doesn't want to hire me because I openly discuss the side effects of sexual trauma is a company I don't want to work for anyway. I have nothing to apologize for or to be ashamed of. Hypersexuality is a common side effect of sexual trauma, as is avoiding sex altogether. I didn't know this at the time I wrote that piece. During that period of my life, I wasn't just taking a guy home from that party because I wanted to. I was actively going on Tinder and looking for guys to meet at bars and then bring home with me because I felt like I needed to. My logic was, if I can sleep with random people, that means I'm fine. That means my trauma doesn't affect me. Oh, the irony. I didn't realize this was a completely normal reaction to sexual trauma until I talked about it in therapy, and my counselor assured me it was a common response. I also read Come As You Are by sex educator Emily Nagoski, who describes how sexual trauma can put you on your sexual accelerator. Sometimes, too, survivors find themselves locked in a pattern of sexual behavior. Their brains become compulsive about undoing the trauma, redoing it differently, or simply understanding it. Like biting on a cold sore or squeezing a pimple, the brain can't leave the trauma alone, even though you know you'd heal faster if you could. The result is that the survivor has multiple partners, often following a habitual pattern, without feeling perfectly in control of the decision to have those partners. I described it as having my finger on the yes button. I was yes happy, but I wasn't happy. I was waking up in the morning with a stranger's arm around me and feeling sick to my stomach. One of these endeavors went terribly wrong and sent me into a huge panic attack that lasted until about 5 a.m. I vowed that morning to leave behind my promiscuity for good. If you are a survivor and you're reading this and you're thinking, wow, that sounds like an awful lot to me, know this, your response is normal. And if you're feeling trapped, frustrated, or unhappy, you can do something about it. There is a way out. Can you get to the fucking point already, slut? I deleted Tinder, took a break from men for a while, and went over to women, no, I made that part up, and did some pretty intense EMDR therapy to reprocess all the memories of what happened to me. Therapy can be scary. The prospect of looking your trauma right in the face, rolling up your sleeves, and doing the work required to put it in its place is beyond intimidating. But I can say from personal experience that you'll come out on the other side feeling 1,000 times better than when you started. I never went back to sleeping with random people. When I felt like I was ready to start dating again, I wrote in my new Tinder profile, "Do not message me if you're only looking for hookups." More on how that turned out next week. Let me tell you something. You want to find a girl who's looking to get laid? look for the girl who puts that on her profile, right? Because that's every woman on Tinder who says, don't message me if you're only looking for hookups. I don't know. I don't even really use a Tinder thing. I did the OkCupid thing. But she says, don't message me if you're only looking for hookups. That's where you call if you want to get fucked, right? Because that's her thing. She's like, don't message me if you're only looking for hookups because I have no capacity to say no. And like, if you message me looking for sex, I'm going to say yes, and I feel like shit about that. It's detrimental to my self-esteem, so don't do it, okay? Yeah. That's rape culture. Fuck this fucking story. This is too long, and it's not interesting. I thought she was going to go and fucking tell us something really fun, and it turned out she was just a fucking whiny little slut. 218-936-0815, Radical Agenda on the Skype there. If you'd like to be on the program, the more you talk, the less I have to. So please do give us a call. Not going to go that much longer, but let me see. Maybe I'll go through one more story. One more story for you. One more story. Not a bedtime story, more a wake-up story. I mean, you guys got hangovers. I don't. I've been sober. I haven't been drinking, which is fucking fantastic for me. I'll share that information with you. I had made a pretty bad habit out of fucking drinking myself to sleep at night on, like, the majority of evenings. And tomorrow I'll be sober for 3 weeks, which is fucking good. It's not easy for me. Like, the first 2 weeks is goddamn difficult. So once I get over that, that's a pretty good thing. And if you're a fucking drunk, stop it, because it's bad for you. Believe me. I usually, like, do the show. Like, I'd be like, you want me to do a drunk episode? Everybody, I love it when you're drunk. No, I'm fucking completely uncreative as a drunk. All I can do is repeat myself. I'm far better sober. And hopefully we keep my fucking head together for a little longer and get some shit done. 218-936-0815. A Radical Agenda on the Sky Staff. If you like to be on the program, or you talk less, I have to. You heard the line. 218-936-0815. Here's what you should know. Here's the anti-migrant politicians in Europe. They want you to know about a word, and you should get familiar with it. Because this is how it happens. This is how it happens. This is when you let a bunch of people into your country who don't have the same culture as you. Not only do they shit in the bushes, but they have a thing they call taharush. Taharush, remember it well. Why anti-migrant politicians say you should know the Arabic word taharush. German investigators suspect the New Year's Eve sexual assaults were part of a Middle Eastern group sex assault activity known as taharush, a German newspaper reported. Such crimes are committed by groups of young men, mostly when there are large gatherings of people, such as demonstrations. They range from sexual assault to rape, the federal crime police offices told German newspaper Die Welt, according to a translation by American thinker. While the group assault sexual assaults during large gatherings had previously been seen in Egypt, most famously the sexual assault of CBS News correspondent Lara Logan while covering the 2011 Tahrir Square demonstrations, well noted that, until now, the violent display had not yet appeared in Germany. Taharush involves groups of men at public gatherings who surround women and sexually assault and rob them, all under the cloak of large crowds. Forming a ring around the woman prevents her from escaping and allows the assailant's anonymity, likely reducing the likelihood that they will be arrested. Britain's Daily Mail reported that the phenomenon is also called taharush gamia, which translates to collective harassment. Anti-migrant politicians from the Netherlands, Geert Wilders and Michael de Graaf, wrote a column Wednesday for the Gaston Institute warning Europeans to familiarize themselves with the word taharush. Remember it well, because we are going to have to deal with it a lot, they wrote. A culture that has a specific word for sexual assaults of women by groups of men is a danger to all women. When one imports Islam in the Netherlands, one also imports the misogynistic culture of Cairo, Damascus, Riyadh into our cities. Next to headscarves, burqas, mosques, honor killings, and terrorism, we now have taharush, they added. The Dutch politicians suggested the New Year's Eve sexual assaults in Cologne provided yet another reason to keep out Middle Eastern migrants. The solution is not that our women keep an arm's length from the male barbarians, that the government keeps these men thousands of kilometers away from us, they wrote. Several media outlets pointed to this disturbing archival video, reportedly from Cairo, as an example of Tahara. It shows a screaming woman led by a group of men into an underpass of a subway tunnel. Now, you're not going to be able to see what I'm saying here, but listen to the audio and just imagine this. You know, there's dozens, if not hundreds of guys are dragging this woman into the subway. And that'll be your fucking wives and daughters and sisters, you know? You wanna let that happen? You want that to be the fucking last thing she ever hears? Is fucking, you know, hundreds of guys saying "Ficky Ficky, Allahu Akbar"? You want that? Well, she screams for her fucking life and nobody's around to help her? You wanna do that? 218-936-0815. Or Radical Agenda on Skype. German police said this week that 516 criminal complaints have been filed surrounding the New Year's Eve college. The New Year's Eve celebration in Cologne. 40% of which were related to sexual attacks. Police said the investigation was focused on North African men, the BBC reported. More than 1 million asylum seekers arrived in Germany last year. 516 criminal complaints, 40% of which were sexual assaults. Hundreds of sexual assaults. Okay. No big deal. Hey, more Syrians, please. We love you. Huh? You know? Let's do that. Hey, Barack Obama, go ahead. Take my money away. Bring them over here. It's going to be fantastic. 218-936-0815, a Radical Agenda on Skype. Maybe I should stop reading the number out because I'll probably call it a day. We don't normally do this on Saturdays. I did this, a little sound check, and I appreciate you tuning in. We do seem to have gotten things worked out, and I appreciate you sticking with me while I did. This is like the third take on this thing. I've been trying to do this since 9 o'clock in the morning. So I'm glad we got it worked out. We normally do this every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you are listening on iTunes or Stitcher or YouTube at some other time, I'd invite you to join us for the live program, at which point you can call in and, you know, ask me questions or whatever. And maybe we'll do this every once in a while. Maybe I'll just out of nowhere do an out-of-the-blue live broadcast. We'll just see how many people tune in, you know. We got like 62 to 66 live listeners on the YouTube channel today. That's not bad for a completely unannounced thing where I had technical difficulties for the first several hours. So I'm glad it worked out. This program, if you're watching on YouTube, do the thumbs up thing there. Go to, do the thumbs up thing. It helps other people find the program so that more people hear it when I say this show is brought to you by you, the listener. I literally can't do this without you. I do the one advertiser. I got the Amazon. You go to ChristopherCantwell.com/Amazon or you click the Amazon banners on the website there. I got the UK and the Canada, too. But if you go to ChristopherCantwell.com/Amazon, that'll take you to the US one. Click the UK or CA links on the website if you're looking for that. But, you do it. It doesn't cost you nothing. Doesn't slow down your order. It just gives me a little taste of the action. That helps keep the lights on, and I really do appreciate it. It helps more than you probably realize. But, you know, still not enough. You know, we're not a huge, huge audience where, like, the advertising revenues pay the bills. We need to be listener-supported. So if you go over to ChristopherCantwell.com/donate, we got the Patreon. We got the Bitcoin. We got the PayPal. You know, come on, I work pretty hard here. I'm working on a Saturday, spending hundreds of dollars on computer equipment and whatnot. You know, maybe you help me out. Maybe you help me cover some of these expenses. Huh? Go to ChristopherCantwell.com/donate. I'm going to suggest you sign up for a monthly subscription package. I'll go ahead and suggest $10 a month. We do this at least 3 days a week, so that's less than a dollar an episode. Plus, I do the anarcho-lobbyist thing. I do blogs. I do videos. There's a lot of shit going on. We're going to have a lot of fun over here, okay? Pretty soon, I'm going to go head over to the campus. I'll go hand out the Truth About Rape Culture DVDs to the kids there. That is going to be fucking fantastic. They're going to lose their minds. It's going to be awesome. So a lot of going on, so stay tuned. You know, ChristopherCantwell.com/subscribe, then you get on my email list. But make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Thumbs up, comment, share, you know, help it get to your friends. Thank you very much for tuning into the Radical Agenda. We will see you Monday, if not before. I usually say good night because we do this in the evening. But have yourselves a wonderful afternoon and a wonderful weekend, why don't you? Okay? See you soon. Thanks for tuning in. Bye.